You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're checking in with Congressman Glenn Grothman on a range of issues surrounding trade, tariffs, family farms in Wisconsin, and starting with the impeachment inquiry. Democrats yesterday opened impeachment hearings to try to get to the bottom of whether President Trump abused his power when he asked a foreign power to target his political rivals. Was there quid pro quo? We'll explore that alongside questions that are on your mind. 800-642-1234. U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman is a Republican who represents Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. His district includes Sheboygan, Manitowoc, and Fond du Lac, and stretches west to central Wisconsin. Congressman Grothman, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, glad to talk to the erudite listeners of Wisconsin Public Radio.
So earlier this month, you voted no on formalizing the House impeachment inquiry. Other Republicans said that the rules proposed by Democrats would fail to provide President Trump with due process rights. Why did you vote no?
Well, we felt the unqualified ability to call our own witnesses, that sort of thing, was inappropriate, created an unfair situation. Not to mention, I really think the motive here, there are people who wanted to impeach President Trump from day one. And, you know, you heard about this, including the person who we felt was connected to the whistleblower. You heard this sort of stuff from the time he was sworn in. And you have to just ask yourself, what is the motivation? Why did they want to impeach President Trump from the time he was sworn in? And I think it's because he is a bit of a lightning rod. You know, he's not like a George Bush. He's not like a Barack Obama. He's out there trying to renegotiate these trade agreements. He's finally trying to stop the flow of illegal immigrants across the border. He's standing up to our allies in Europe, insisting that they pay their fair share. And when you rock the boat, you upset the swamp. And
well,
the swamp is going to fight back.
Well, let's look at Ukraine here for a moment. This inquiry investigating whether he used military aid as leverage over Ukraine so it would investigate the Bidens. President Trump has denied a quid pro quo, but there has been testimony to the contrary. If you see enough evidence supporting a quid pro quo, is that an impeachable offense?
I could argue that either way. I think it's important that people look into this. I mean, it's something that I always wondered about. You know, you heard books written, I think even prior to when Donald Trump was sworn in, talking about how Joe Biden's son was benefiting substantially from his relationship with the Ukraine. And I think it must be mystifying to Donald Trump why that was not investigated at the time or why the press wasn't making a big deal out of it.
So would it have been appropriate for President Trump to withhold military aid to pressure Ukraine to investigate the Bidens?
I don't think I would have done that, but I don't think it's impeachable either.
So the failure to actually finish a quid pro quo means President Trump never committed an impeachable offense?
I don't think anything I've seen so far would lead me to one to say it's impeachable. Impeachable offense. You got to look at the motivation of these people. You've got to wonder why it was well known in Washington, and why I think even a book was written about it. Why President or then Vice President Biden, why his son was making so much money when he clearly wasn't qualified for the job because of his relationship with the Ukrainian company. And you know, and the degree to which, because somebody is getting enriched there, the degree to which Vice President Biden was that way was weighing in. And I think it's very frustrating that at the time, maybe people just thought that's the way it is in Washington, and that's the type of thing vice presidents do. But I don't think it was. I think something should have been done at the time, and I think it's something that should be looked into.
Let's go to Willem now, joining us from Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hello. I do think it's an impeachable offense. If the standard, I don't understand why the Republican Party was willing to impeach President Clinton and put us through the whole Starr investigation for a lie when Donald Trump lies every day. And asking foreign governments to help in U.S. elections doesn't serve the interests of our country. He asked the Chinese on the White House, outside the White House, to investigate the Bidens. He's asked Putin to do it. He's denied the findings of the military or of the intelligence agencies that the Russians interfered with our elections.
So Willem is saying,
I think a little bit there is you got to realize President Trump's got a kind of dry sense of humor. And I know you got a dry sense of humor, you know, when he asked the Chinese to investigate the Bidens, on national TV. I don't think he expects the Chinese to investigate the Bidens. I think he has fun with the press corps. And, you know, it's a tough job as a politician because some people don't have a dry sense of humor.
Well, we're going to move on here from the impeachment inquiry to other news with U.S. Congressman Glenn Grothman. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What issues in your community should Congress address? What are your top concerns? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Congressman, let's move closer to home here. This year, Wisconsin has seen a growing number of small farm bankruptcies. You've said dairy farmers are facing their greatest challenges in decades. Is action needed by Congress or President Trump to address this situation?
Well, all farm groups, and they're different, you know, dairy farmers are involved in different groups, feel we have to expand our markets. I think President Trump is trying to do that. As your listeners, I'm sure, know, we have a reached agreement with Canada and Mexico that we feel will open up more markets for Wisconsin dairy farmers. He's also working with Japan. We've had the price come up from a low around $14 to, I think it's been over $18 recently, but we've got to keep it there for an extended period of time. And hopefully we'll bring this agreement to the floor of the House to get it ratified. I think one of the frustrating things going on when people focus on the impeachment thing is this new agreement with Mexico and Canada that'll open up more markets has been sitting there. It should have been voted on 6 months ago.
Well, it could come to vote, I understand, in the House this week.
I hope so. We haven't been told it will be yet. And that would be good. But that'll be a step in the right direction. I think his negotiations with Japan were a step in the right direction. And he is trying to improve our overall trade relationship with China, and that would be a great thing if he was able to get something done there. But I'm pleased with what he's done with Mexico and Canada and Japan, and hopefully that will drive up the price a little bit. Part of our problem, of course, is over time we just have more and more milk produced in this country. And, you know, with the law of supply and demand, you have these big increases in the amount of milk supplied nationwide, not in Wisconsin, but nationwide, it drives down the price.
We've had Republicans and Democrats from Wisconsin's congressional delegation come on the program criticizing the president's trade policies. The trade war with China seems to get the most criticism. How do you feel about it?
Well, you could not continue to have the Chinese steal our intellectual property, steal our patents forever, and imagine the United States is going to be a great country. I think it's frustrating that it must be very frustrating for President Trump that he's trying to clean up a mess left by so many other presidents who didn't address the problem. But insofar as he's going to try to do something with intellectual property, the patents and that sort of thing, I applaud him for that. I wasn't a big fan of the steel and aluminum tariffs, but it looks like we've gotten over the worst of the hump there. I think when you do something this complicated, you should be getting more waivers out for companies that can't get products from anywhere but China. My office, on a personal level, has had success getting waivers from some Wisconsin companies. But like I said, overall, we can't continue to be a great country and have the Chinese steal all our ideas year after year after year.
We're talking with U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman on a range of issues that hit home to Wisconsin and pressing discussion before lawmakers on Capitol Hill. With you in the mix, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Canton. We have Congressman Glenn Grothman joining us from Washington. We're moving through a range of topics that lawmakers on Capitol Hill are debating and the effect on us here in Wisconsin. Some of the topics we want to get to include immigration and border security and where we're at with another short-term spending bill on how to fund the government. What do you want to ask Congressman Grothman on these issues of the southern border and government spending? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go back to the phones now. Troy is joining us from Muskego this morning. Hi, Troy.
Hello. It's like one of the things that I get annoyed with politicians is how they like to use Trump's name to try to make it like somehow he fixed something or created solved the problem. As far as dairy goes, the reason why that your guest mentioned that dairy has gone up, one of the main variables why that has gone up is because dairy farmers actually have been gone out of business or closed their farms. That's a big variable. And then that makes more of a supply and demand effect. So that's got nothing to do with Trump. So I don't know why we're taking statistics and tying Trump's name.
Well, I think all dairy groups believe the answer to the low prices is increasing demand. Part of increasing demand is increasing exports to Mexico, Japan, and China, and Canada. President Trump is trying to do that. We know that the agreement with Mexico and Canada has not been ratified by Congress yet, but it is something that President Trump is trying to do and something that I am trying to do. We know that probably the new agreements with Japan have been so recent it hasn't resulted in a huge increase of dairy goods to Japan yet, but these are the answers to the low milk prices.
Thank you, Troy. Let's pivot here for a moment. You introduced legislation this week that's aimed at protecting veterans and all Americans from predatory lending practices. What would this legislation do?
Well, it would cap the interest rate at 36%. Individual states have historically done that, and we've had laws against usury going all the way back to George Washington's time, who was opposed to usury. Going back to biblical times, people thought usury was wrong. When people wind up having to pay interest at over 400%, you're really taking advantage of the financially illiterate. And it's just a bad product. It's becoming more and more of a federal issue as more and more people get these loans online instead of at the local brick-and-mortar store. So I think Congress has to step in. I am the lead Republican on the bill. Right now I'm the only Republican on the bill, but I'm hopefully we'll get it out of committee sometime in the next couple of weeks and get it on the floor of Congress. I hope the media covers it. Even if the bill doesn't get out of the Senate, I think a bill like that publicizes to people out there, don't go to these payday loan stores, the cash store and that ilk, because it's just such a bad financial decision.
Why 36%? Why cap it at that percentage?
Well, I think that I guess you could pick out a little higher number, a little lower number. I mean, when you're dealing with people charging interest rates of 300 to 400%, anything would be an improvement. I think 36% is such that even if the interest goes up a little, like it did in the late 70s, where it would be, you could hypothetically imagine a situation in which 19 or 20% would be a fair amount. 36% still covers it.
We're discussing national politics with U.S. Congressman Glenn Grothman. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What issues in your community should Congress work on? What are your top concerns? What do you think about federal trade policies, immigration, or predatory lending, as we've been talking about? Let's turn to immigration and border security here. You called it our country's greatest concern earlier this year, but attention has seemed to fade. How should Congress be addressing immigration or the crisis at the southern border right now?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a coincidence that interest has faded. I think that's one of the reasons for the impeachment hearings, because they want to force the media to cover an impeachment process that we all know is going nowhere and ignore what's going on at our southern border. Now, at its worst, in May, we were processing over 145,000 people, and that doesn't include people who were sneaking through the country without being processed. At that time, over 100,000 people a month were being allowed in the country. There are a variety of things that have to do. We have to be supportive of President Trump and saying, if you're going to come here, we don't want you coming here if it looks like you're going to take advantage of public benefits. We've got to be supportive of President Trump and say, look it, if you're coming here seeking asylum, you have to be really seeking asylum. You can't just say you're seeking asylum. And then we can get back down to manageable levels of illegal immigration. I want to point out to your listeners that President Trump or me have never done anything advocating the cut in legal immigration. You know, I happened to be in Milwaukee recently to watch swearing in a new people. Every month in Milwaukee, we swear in over 400 new legal immigrants in Wisconsin, and they swear in new immigrants in Madison as well. So, and these are just absolutely wonderful immigrants. We have about 4 million people in this country who are here on legal visas. Nobody's talking about reducing that. Some people are talking about raising that number. But to get people here illegally, some of which are going to take advantage of our public benefits, some of which are drug dealers, some of which are known criminals, is just a recipe for ruining our country. And that's why I think it is the most important issue out there. You know, when I approach this job, I sometimes say, when I do something, how is it going to affect America 20 years from now? And of all the problems out there we can address, if we don't address the immigration problem, the America that we know and love is not going to be here 15 years from now. Maybe it won't be here 10 years from now.
Do you support President Trump's push to end DACA, the Obama-era protections for the Dreamers that reached the Supreme Court this week?
Well, you know, I think everybody realizes that some of these people are going to have to stay here. But yes, we can't across the board say that everybody who was brought here as a minor gets a path to citizenship. I mean, we don't know how many millions of people we're letting in here, and we don't know how many of these people we want to have as citizens. And it's unfair to let those folks jump ahead of so many people who are trying to get here legally. I think everybody understands eventually some of these DACA folks are going to wind up citizens in America, however.
Would you support increasing visas to our country?
I don't think we have to increase them right now. I think there are some professions in which we're going to have to make some movement there, but we have to get a handle on all the illegal immigration first. We can't talk about more people coming here legally until we get a handle on the sea of people coming here illegally, which we haven't done yet.
Well, as you look at border security, then where could the federal government find money to pay for more border patrol agents, more border infrastructure to keep people out?
Oh, this is a money-saving deal. I mean, people, you know, can argue whether illegal immigration is costing $50 billion a year, $100 billion a year. I've been down at the border 3 times this year. People are already, the Border Patrol feels, showing up for the free medical care. We know California has said, you know, come one, come all for free medical care in the United States. At least in Wisconsin on the Medicaid program, which is, I assume, what they're talking about, the federal government pays 60% of that. And like I said, the Border Patrol tells me they believe that people are coming here now if they have medical problems because they know the United States will take care of it. So if you add more Border Patrol folks, you are saving money.
Let's look at the federal budget for a moment. You have legislation aimed at preventing government shutdowns. Another shutdown could happen next month if Republicans and Democrats can't reach an agreement on federal spending. How would your legislation prevent shutdowns?
Well, what we could do is we could do what we do in the state of Wisconsin, where automatically, if you don't get the budget done on time, the government continues to spend the exact same amount of money as they did a year ago. That's why you don't have shutdowns on a state level. The state of Wisconsin sometimes doesn't get their budget done by July 1st, but as we wait for them to complete the process, we spend the exact same amount as last year. That's what we should be doing on a federal level as well. We are going to have a controversial vote coming up in about a week, trying to extend the what we call a continuing resolution, trying to keep the government open. There's always a disagreement there among Republicans. Unless they attach something odious on there, I intend to vote for it. There's always been a split with Republicans. There's some Republicans out there who always want to shut down the government. I'm not one of those people. I think I was one of 2 out of 5 Republicans before October 1st who voted to keep the government open, and I intend, unless they attach something to the bill, I intend to vote to keep the government open again later this month.
Are you worried about a potential shutdown again this year coming ahead of Thanksgiving?
There's some people out there who always try to do it. I think cooler heads will prevail this time. I know some of my other Republican colleagues don't want to shut down. I know Donald Trump doesn't want to shut down. So I just think we have to get out there and explain to the public how I think irresponsible it is for some congressmen always to vote for a shutdown.
Congressman Glenn Grothman, thank you for joining us.
Always glad to talk to the erudite listeners of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Congressman Glenn Grothman is a Republican who represents Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives. Coming up, we look at what political affiliation means to poll workers. Do you think Republican and Democratic parties should have the right to pick poll workers? What are your thoughts there? As a voter, do you think partisanship among poll workers matters? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll talk with the president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're pulling back the curtain, looking inside the world of poll workers in Wisconsin who carry out our state elections. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. A state law has been on the books for a long time. It requires clerks to use lists submitted by the Democratic and Republican parties when they hire poll workers. But the parties provide far fewer names than what clerks need, and that's where we get curious as to how this works to fill out staffing rosters. Have you ever been a poll worker? What polling site did you work at? What did you find to be challenging or rewarding in this job? How were you treated by voters? We're at 800-642-1234. Diane Conan is president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. She's also the city clerk for the city of Oconomowoc. Diane, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thank you, Kate.
So Democrats and Republicans are creating these lists of possible poll workers to give to you city clerks. They have until November 30th to submit these lists. What does this entail? What does this list include?
The list that I have received give you names of individuals who are willing to be poll workers in my community, and it basically just gives a name, a phone number, you know, how we can contact them, their address, and a short, brief, if you will, paragraph from the party saying that they are nominating these individuals to be poll workers on election day.
So the parties are kind of like your recruitment agency, if you will.
To a degree, they provide a list of names, but that list can have one name on it, and it could have 20 names on it. It just depends who's in your area or in your county that they can find as, you know, party members that want to be poll workers.
Yeah, in your history as a city clerk, how consistent is the quantity on these lists from election to election?
It's a low quantity. I have 4 polling locations, and on an average, you have 7 poll workers that work at each location. So for me, I need 28 just to fill the polls, my polls, and then, you know, you need some backup because things do happen. You know, people get ill, things like that, so you need coverage for backup. And I would say my lists have probably no more than 10 names on them.
How is this system, Diane, supposed to create fairness at the polls to create a professional setting?
It can work if the poll worker is someone who truly wants to work the polls and who is committed to working every election, and we can have anywhere from 1 to 4 elections a year. Of course, if there's a special election, something like that, you could have more, but typically it's 1 to 4 elections. And I find that those individuals, most of those individuals on the list, do want to work. They do want to do their civic duty, and they do it to the best of their ability. However, you also get names on the list where they really, they might work an election or two, but then they really don't want to do the elections anymore, or they can only do some because they're not available. So it does get hard to manage if you don't have that commitment.
Tell us about some of the roles that they have at the polling place, because I often think of the poll workers as the people taking my ID and making sure I sign in the right place in the book. But there are other roles. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I have labeled my roles. We have the registration table. So an individual who comes in and is not registered already as a voter, they need to get registered. So you have registration poll workers. Then I call the next station my poll book station, and that would be where you are already registered. You present your photo ID. You give your name, your address. The workers find you in the poll book. Then they will issue you a voter number, and then you go to the next station, which is my ballot initialing station, and the voter exchanges their voter number for a paper ballot, typically a paper ballot. There is also an ADH machine, but they will then get their ballot and go to the booth and vote. And then you have a chief inspector who is in charge of the polls, and they're typically watching over the voting equipment in case, say, for instance, a ballot would reject from the machine, then they can go over there, read the message, and assist the voter as to why their ballot rejected. They also are in charge of all the paperwork and the opening of the polls and closing of the polls. So your chief inspector can do everything. Some polls have greeters. When you walk in, you are greeted by an individual who will help direct you to where you need to go. And that is the typical positions at a polling place on election day.
Which political party can have more poll workers at a site?
It would be the party that had the majority votes at the general election, so whether it be the gubernatorial or the presidential, depending on what year it is, that would be the party that can have one more party-affiliated worker at the polls.
Why do you find people enjoy being poll workers? What's the draw?
For me, the poll workers that work for the city of Oconomowoc, they want to do, they're the type who like to volunteer. They want to do their civic duty. They enjoy the process. They don't mind working the long hours. They see neighbors and friends or maybe family members at the polls because a lot of these individuals are active in the community in other ways, and so they know so many people. And because it is only 1 to 4 times a year, it's not obviously taking a lot of their time away from other things that they have to do in their lives.
We're talking about poll workers, polling sites, and going into inside with Diane Conan on staffing. She's president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. Time for your questions, your thoughts. Have you ever served as a poll worker? What did you find to be challenging or rewarding in this position? How did voters treat you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Diane, what was your journey like becoming a city clerk, and now that you're so involved in the Municipal Clerks Association as president?
I started working in a village. It was a part-time position, and the reason I applied for that position is my husband and I own a business in that community, and so I was able to go from my position as a village clerk, deputy clerk, over to our business because I did the payroll and all those other things for the business. And so it was just a nice transition for me. little did I know that I would really, really enjoy doing the work that I did. And so after 6 years, I decided to apply for a job in the city of Oconomowoc, and it was a full-time job. And I was hired, and approximately a year and a half later, I became their professional clerk, and I've been doing that job ever since. And as part of becoming a professional clerk, you can earn your certifications, and there's always continuing education because laws do change. We need to stay up on those laws. And I just found that education so rewarding and the networking that I've continued my journey, constantly getting educated and going to conferences and seminars and off-site classes, you know, where you would just go for one day to a specific subject on a class. And I've met so many wonderful people, and the community I work for is wonderful. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better elected body and all my coworkers. So I've stayed in it.
What are the greatest challenges that you see city clerks face and what you hear out there from other cities?
One of the biggest challenges for all municipal clerks is that when laws are passed that directly affect the work we do, we haven't been able to truly have a voice at the table to give some input in how that would affect not only our community, but our jobs, our roles as clerk and trying to administrate the jobs that need to be done. And following some of the laws sometimes is a bit challenging. Sometimes it's financial challenges. Sometimes it's staffing challenges. But I think that is overall the biggest challenge for municipal clerks is not having a voice at the table.
And when you carry out these laws, one of the laws in terms of poll workers is that they have to meet some requirements. What are the requirements to be a poll worker?
Well, you have to live within the county of a polling place you would work at. So, for instance, for the city of Oconomowoc, we are in Waukesha County. So any poll worker can live within any municipality in that county, and they are able to work at any of the polling places. They also have to be a citizen. If they are a chief inspector, they have to be a citizen of your municipality. So there's a little bit different requirements for a chief inspector versus a poll worker, which is an election inspector as well, but not the chief. And
we're going to pause. And they need to be 18. Is that
right?
Yeah. I knew that was coming out there. We're talking about poll workers with the Oconomowoc City Clerk, Dan Conan, who is president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Dan Conan here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the inner workings of how polling sites are staffed with the help of the city clerk of Oconomowoc. Nearly all states require a partisan makeup for their staffing of poll workers to help ensure elections are fair and unbiased and professional. We're learning how it works here in Wisconsin with your questions. What do you want to know about poll workers and their duties? What questions do you have? Have you ever served as a poll worker? What was it like? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And City Clerk Dan Conan stays with us. She also leads the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. Let's go to the phones now. Mark is joining us from Neenah. Hi, Mark.
Hi there.
So what's your story about polling sites?
Well, I was in Neenah, and I took my daughter the first time she ever voted about 6 months ago or 8 months ago. I can't remember. And I don't know if they're really supposed to do this or not, but the poll leaders announced that she was a first-time voter, and the entire group of people in the voting area all clapped for her and kind of hooted and hollered. And it was really wonderful for her. She really felt special. So
yeah.
I just wanted to say that there's some really, really cool, dedicated people that work there. So that's all I had to say.
Mark, thank you so much for the story. Diane, really setting the tone there that voting is important.
Yes, it is. And the workers do everything they can to make sure that every individual who walks into the polling place can cast their ballot. And, you know, it means a lot to them to be able to provide that service. And I haven't met one poll worker who truly doesn't love to work the polls.
Let's,
I did want to add one thing,
ahead.
If I could, Kate,
mm-hmm.
about the qualifications to be a poll worker. Just quickly, one of the qualifications is that the person cannot be a candidate for any office that is being voted on at that election. They need to be able to read and write English language. And besides being a citizen of the United States, they need to reside in that election district, so wherever that polling place is, for at least 10 days.
Well, let's bring in another call now. Tom joining us from Port Wing. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I serve as a poll worker, and we oftentimes serve a little bit of snacks and so forth, and it's a great time to reconnect with people in the community. But my question is, I believe there's a real appearance of fairness when you divide it up amongst, well, say, Democrats and Republicans. And my question is this: what do you do when you have a community where it's predominantly Democrat or predominantly Republican, and you really can't find the opposing workers in terms of party affiliation?
Thanks so much for that question, Tom. Diane, what do you do?
We also have poll workers on our list that are nonpartisan. And as much as we would hope that the parties would each give us a pretty good size list so we can have each of the party represented, when you don't get the list, you use your nonpartisan workers, and that's really all you can do. And those individuals have not declared a party, but they are they take an oath to do the best job that they can and keep it fair and impartial at any job that they're doing.
Tom found community and camaraderie with fellow poll workers. Do you find, Diane, that they return again and again to the job over the years, over the decades?
I do. I have workers who have worked over 20 years, and they love doing it. They just truly do. And it takes training. You know, they need to go through training. So they also, besides working the polls, they commit to coming in for training. I do my own training here at my city hall, and so and they enjoy it. They I never get flack, so they're very willing to do whatever I ask.
Is it paid training?
For our city, we do not pay for the training. We do pay to be a poll worker on election day.
What goes into the training? What do they need to learn?
I train all my election inspectors on each of the jobs at the polls, so registration, poll book, and ballot. And the chief inspector gets a separate training, but I also train them on the paperwork because the paperwork is a big part of the polls. And then, of course, we work on opening the polls, closing the polls, and we talk about things that happened on the previous elections that, you know, could help them in case they run into a situation, how they would deal with it and handle it.
What types of situations might they encounter or that you really want them to understand how to handle?
A voter would come in, they would give their name and address, and it does not match the address in the poll book. So then they try to determine if the poll worker has moved. So in order to do that, they will call our office. I'm not at the polls because they're off-site from City Hall, and we will look in the file, and we will see what that last voter registration shows as an address, And so then they have to sometimes the voter has to re-register because they have moved. And sometimes they may not be voting at that polling location, so then they'll have to direct them to where they do go to vote.
We're discussing poll workers with Diane Conan. She's president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. And you have a line as to what you want to know about being a city clerk. 800-642-1234. Diane, last month, the new Wisconsin Election Security Council held its first meeting to look at cybersecurity. Should voters be concerned about election security in Wisconsin at the polls?
I don't think they should be concerned as to feel panicked about it. There's always the threat of security breaches, but the Wisconsin Elections Commission has been and is working diligently to make sure that all municipalities have updated software, firewalls, IT support, and that each individual community is also working to ensure. We have our own IT department, so for instance, for us, our IT department is on top of making sure that we are secure and safe. And the process is more manual than I think people know. And so if it's a manual process, there's nobody able to get into that.
How do you find your technology to be? Do you see that computer equipment and computer systems are up to date?
For the most part, they are. But you do have some very small communities, very rural. They have limited financial means. They don't have IT people on staff. So those are the instances where it's not a lot of communities, but those are the instances when you're only as strong as your weakest link. So Wisconsin Elections Commission is reaching out to make sure that they have what they need to be protected.
So circling back to the polling lists and when you need to have your final list together, what is the timeline there?
Each community may print their poll list on a different day before the election. We print ours on Fridays. So any individual who has either mailed in a registration or come to the clerk's office on the Friday before an election, we get that entered and they will be in the poll list. After that time, they will not show up in the poll list, but if they register, we issue them a certification and that they would bring to the polls to show that they came to City Hall and registered and that they are allowed to vote. They don't have to re-register.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Kate. I did enjoy this.
Diane Conan is president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. She's also the city clerk for the city of Oconomowoc. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.